Hi, I'm Meredith.
Hi, I'm Joseph, and you are listening to Are You Waiting for Permission?
It's a podcast for those who don't want to wait any longer.
Good morning, Meredith. How are you this morning?
I'm so well. How are you this morning, Joseph?
Excellent, excellent. I'm so excited about today's guest. How about you?
I am beyond excited, and I think you know him.
I think I know him biblically. So, ladies and gentlemen of our listening audience, full disclosure, this morning's guest is Eli Hans, my husband. Yes.
Yay. I'm so excited to be here.
We're so excited to have you.
I'm very proud of you guys for doing this. I think this is awesome, and hopefully it'll inspire people to give themselves permission to do the thing that they're here to do.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Eli. It already is. We have been getting some beautiful messages, right, Meredith?
Beautiful. I have a friend that reached out to me from Canada who was like, I'm going to finally quit my job.
Oh, wow. That's
I'm going to finally quit my job.
You're going to be
sitting
known
in my inbox for 2 years.
You're going to be known for the people that encourage others to quit their jobs and get sued.
No, I say, if you're unhappy, quit.
Yes.
Follow your dreams.
Follow your dreams, please.
I love it. Yes.
Yeah. So that's what I want to talk about. But first, I want to introduce Eli Hans. So he is a writer and an actor and now a playwright. And he is also a painter. He plays piano. He is like this multi-passionate, multi-faceted, amazing human being that I am lucky to call my husband. And he's showing up here today because he has had a really interesting life path that has not always been necessarily supported or acknowledged by other people, but he has been brazen in his approach to how he lives his life. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. How's that sound?
Sounds pretty good. Yes.
So Eli, I want to start by asking you about how is it that you have created a life that has been so atypical? You never had a job that, you know, you went to every day and got the gold watch at the end of it. You've really created your own path. And I want to know, who is it in your life? And if it's yourself, that's perfectly okay. Who is it in your life that's given you permission to live this kind of avant-garde experience?
Well, first of all, let me say that I have had a job, but I was in the corporate world for only about 2 years. And believe me, that was enough for me. And when you say atypical, I just want to say that it's been an amazing ride of creative exploration, because I've never been able to just stick to one thing. I couldn't even like decide on my major in college because there were so many things that I loved to do. And I think I want to say that I finally gave myself permission to accept that I'm a multi-passionate person. And I've reinvented my career many, many times. And I love it. I can't imagine sticking to one job for 35 years and then get the gold watch and retire. I mean, that's just not a life that I ever envisioned for myself.
Mm-hmm. I do have a question for you around that, Eli, which is, did you ever feel, was there a struggle for you to identify as a multi-passionate person? Because we do live in a world, in a culture, and I know you're in Mexico, we're in the U.S., and there are differences in how we look at things in terms of culturally, but did you feel that stress or that pressure to have to pick a lane?
Always. Always, always, always. You know, I think people have a tendency to want to peg you. Like, who are you? Like, what do you do? You know, when I was a kid, I was the guinea pig generation of Montessori schools in Mexico City. And I remember everything was very tactile, you know, and I loved it. You know, and you know that little puzzle when there's like a circle that you have to stick it into the circle and a square that has to fit into the square? Well, the way I see that is that multi-passionate people have a lot of different edges and they don't quite fit into the circle or into the square. So it took me a long time to kind of finally acknowledged that I was that kind of a person and that it's okay for me to explore what all of those different edges are. But, you know, even to this day, even though I've had successful careers, people still say, how come you switch careers so much? Why don't you stick to one thing? Like, it's a bad thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's seen as a bad thing. Why? Oh, you're changing again? I go, yeah, I did that for 3 years. Like, I figured it out. It was fun. Now I need something else. You know, and I love exploring all of those aspects of my creativity. I think that it would feel kind of like I wouldn't be really honoring myself fully if I only stuck to like one thing, one or two things.
So can I share a story about the two of you?
Yes.
Okay. So you both gave me permission and inspired me tremendously because it's when I first met the two of you, which was in 2016. And but being a multi-passionate person and embracing that is a lane in itself, if you will. And there was, I met Joseph first and then Eli, I met you second. But I remember you both gave me your business cards. And I remember, I think maybe it was Joseph's business card had like four different disciplines listed on it. I think it was like interior designer, coach, improviser. I don't remember. But I looked at that card and I remember I came home back to the States and I was talking to my friend. I have this friend, Eric Isle, who is an amazing coach and also multi-passionate human. But I was like, I feel like these two men gave me permission to just be all of my parts, like to embrace all of those things that I'm passionate about. And that had, for some reason, not dawned on me that I could do that. Like, I didn't feel like anyone else had given me that permission. And so you two were this beautiful model for that. And I just wanted to share that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, we always kid around that we have about like 8 or 10 different business cards. And kind of like, I have all these different business cards in my wallet. And depending on who I meet, I decide which one.
Well, there's a tip for all of our listeners.
So, Eli, one thing that you said that really resonated with me, and I know it's going to resonate with our listeners, is you said, I was honoring myself. That's so beautiful.
Thank you.
How many of us do that? And a better question is, how many of us don't do that?
Yeah, well, you know, I think there's a lot of the inner struggle of that balance between honoring your creative self, your calling, and then the responsible thing to do, the secure thing to do, you know, getting a job you don't really love necessarily, but you love knowing that a paycheck's coming in every month. You know, versus going out on your own and exploring how you can find ways to monetize and market your natural gifts to make a difference in the world. You know, to me, I've always been on that quest. It's like, how can I explore what I love to do that's effortless because I love it so much, that's a natural ability that I have or that I have honed that skill to make a difference in the world and make a great living at it. I've always said if you could get all of those things in alignment, that's like heaven on earth. You're doing what you love and still being able to make a difference in the world in a positive way. And there's nothing better than that to me. So that's been a lifetime of exploration. And that changes. Mm-hmm. That changes for me. It's changed many times.
Mm-hmm. For some of us, when we have those natural talents, we're likely to dismiss them because they come easily to us. So we don't give ourselves enough credit or value ourselves enough for those natural talents.
Absolutely. You know, when I was a teenager, 16 years old, I was doing a lot of painting of murals, my sister's baby's room or their friends. And once they knew that I did it, I loved painting and I was painting walls. And people said, well, how much are you going to charge? And I felt like, how can I charge for something that's natural to me, that just comes out? You know, it felt almost like I was prostituting myself for a natural skill that I had. And I realized, no, this is valuable. You know, I love doing it, but people really appreciate having it. So I started charging for painting murals on walls. And that was, I think, the first time I realized that those natural skills that we have, that we do tend to take for granted, are valuable to the world, and that we are worth getting paid for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and when we say yes and to that monetization of our craft, yeah, we're also helping out other artists too, right? Because I feel like it's all... Ooh, that's a dog.
Sorry.
We are all a part, and your dog agrees, of this intricate system, right? And so if we undervalue ourselves, then we undervalue our craft, and we undervalue what it does provide to the community at large. And it makes it difficult for all of us to be able to thrive.
Yes.
So can we fast forward from the age of 16, where you're painting murals, Eli, to your last birthday? How young did you turn on your last birthday?
Oh, it was a tough birthday. I turned 60, which is crazy. I just can't believe that. For many, many reasons. You know, for one thing, I'm not really supposed to be alive on the planet. I had cancer 6 years ago. That was a bad situation. So the fact that I maneuvered through that and that I'm here is just a precious gift. So turning 60 was amazing, but it also came with a lot of, oh my God, I got to this age, and now what? Mm-hmm. What's the next stage? What do I really want to do? And I've been doing some cancer coaching for the past couple of years, and it's been challenging. You know, it's a tough thing to do, and I needed a little break. And for my 60th birthday, I gave myself permission to do this experiment. Can I tell you about it?
Mm-hmm, please do.
So my experiment was, I'm just going to follow my joy for 30 days. And guilt-free was a big part of that agreement. And that part was difficult, because it's like, how can I just quit working? You know, I was like, okay. So the first couple of weeks were hard. I didn't know really what that meant. I took a lot of naps, and then
my kind of guy.
And then I discovered my hidden, long lost love of singing. So I started singing again, and I started recording with like GarageBand, just for fun, with like karaoke tapes. And oh my God, I just got all lit up. You know, everything shifted, everything changed, by giving myself the permission to follow my joy for 30 days. And then it was for my birthday, Joseph and I did this little video. I did a parody of a song, a Disney song. And it was like kind of like my COVID message to the world. And I did it for my family for my 60th little birthday party on Zoom. And I posted it on Facebook. And it just blew me away what happened. It just blew me away. Within just a little while, it's been seen like almost 4,000 times. It's been shared, I don't know how much. And I got all these amazing comments from people I didn't even know about how they were touched through that song and through my voice and the message.
Can you tell us what song it was?
It was... The song from Little Mermaid called, oh my gosh, Joseph, what is it?
Look at this stuff. Isn't it neat?
Yes.
Wouldn't you think
I forget
my
the title of it.
Complete?
Something about my world. I'm sorry, I can't remember it at this moment.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Joseph just gave you some backup.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah.
So what happened was... Because I was privy to this experiment and to the process, was that when you connected to your singing, Eli, how did you take that even further, right? So what happened after the 30 days were over?
Well, after the 30 days were over and I got all that incredible feedback. And it's not about, you know, oh, look how many people liked it. It was just about, I had no idea that people would respond that way to me singing. You know, it just was like a secret thing that I did. So I decided that I wanted to, you know, when I coach people, I always talk to people about this idea of sharing their natural talents with the world to make a difference. So I thought, how could I use my voice and my love of theater and acting and writing? And I wonder if there's some way I can use all of those skills to somehow create a theatrical experience to inspire people to heal their lives. Mm-hmm. And this whole idea, it just all of a sudden clicked. And oh my God, I was on fire for about 3 or 4 months. So I developed a show. It's a one-man show, or a mostly one-man show, called Out of the Blue. And it's kind of, it's a musical about my healing journey. Mm. And I'm right in the messy middle right now, editing. And luckily I have Meredith to help me with all that. She's been amazing in helping me figure out what needs to stay, what needs to go. And I have a surprise guest in the show that I can't really say who it is.
Don't give it away.
All I want to say, it's not me and it's not Meredith, but someone on this call.
That's beautiful. I love witnessing your process and seeing how excited you get about this. So one thing comes up for me, Eli. So our listeners, thank you for being here, listener. Some of them are thinking, oh, fudge, I don't know what brings me joy. Eli's really lucky. He knew. Taking naps and singing, he was really clear about that. But what would you say to our listeners who don't really know what brings them joy?
I believe, honestly, that we all at a deep level know what lights our fire, you know, what sets our soul on fire. I think it's just a matter of exploring. I think that we've all grown up as adults and we got serious and we work. And, you know, if you just go back and start thinking about what did you love to do when you were a child, when you were a kid, what kinds of things were you naturally good at? What did you spend hours doing that you couldn't believe time had flown by so quickly? Those are all indicators of things that bring us joy. You know, and I really feel that if we are still and listen, there is a voice inside of us that can almost, like, it's a voice that's calling at us, you know, to show up in a certain way in this world and bring our own magic to the world. I mean, each of us has a unique way of doing something or bringing something to the world that can help other people. Mm-hmm. And I call that a calling, you know. It can be very subtle, but I do think that the path to discover this calling is the indicator is joy.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. I'm curious too, can we dig a little bit deeper with this question that Joseph posed, which is, some of our listeners might be working multiple jobs. They might be single moms. They might have a lot of things, a lot of moving parts in their lives and not a lot of stillness for themselves. So is there a baby step or something that we can offer to our listeners to help rest and find that calm and that place so that they can tap into that voice, that joy, that centered place that maybe they're not able to get to on a regular basis because of how their lives are set up?
Yeah, I do think that stillness and quiet are really an essential aspect of this. And first of all, which is why I love your podcast so much, the whole idea of giving yourself permission to go there. I think that's the first baby step. Mm-hmm. And then creating a few moments of stillness, of maybe connecting to nature, walking in a park, just going out and breathing and looking at the sky. And just, I think gratitude is also another very key essential. Mm. Being grateful for what exists in our life and what doesn't. exist in our life. And, you know, even if it's just a moment of singing in the shower or drawing something while you're doing another task, you know, I think that there are ways that we can start prioritizing, because that's a big part of self-care. You know, doing something that matters to us, that's important to only us. I don't know if that answers your question, but I think that that's really important.
I think it does. I think, you know, what I am always interested in is trying to think about who are those, you know, who's the listener out there right now that just needs the one little baby step, just the one baby step. So I think you gave some beautiful ones. And so I appreciate that.
Yeah.
The word that resonated with me, Eli, and with our listeners is prioritize. Following our joy when we have a lot of moving parts, as Meredith said, that doesn't become a priority, right? Picking the kids up from school or paying the bill or figuring out how to get our resume on monster.com, that becomes the priority. Following our joy doesn't.
Well, you know, now. I remember about 11 years ago where Joseph and I had a very successful interior design business, which grew out of, again, just an exploration. Mm-hmm. And we didn't set out to have an interior design business. It just kind of gave itself to us by just both of us being passionate about that. But after we really developed the business and we had this firm and we worked on it for about 10 years, all of a sudden we were in the rat race like everybody else. You know, the wheel was just spinning and it was just work, 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 make money, work, 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 so we can pay for the car, for the house, for the this and that. And I remember telling Joseph, you know, it feels like my spirit has shriveled up to a raisin. Like I feel like I have a raisin. And I said, just because we live in this country and the rat race seems to be the reality, I told him, there's got to be another reality. This can't be the way life is done forever, because it wasn't fulfilling anymore. And we didn't know what it was going to be. But as I've come to know and believe, I think that when we become really clear in our lives about what it is that we want to create, then the universe kind of starts realigning and all these things start happening out of our own control. And I just told Joseph, we've got to discover a new reality. And then bam, the economy tanked in 2008, which we did not cause, really.
So listeners, do not blame Eli and Joseph.
We're not okay. That omnipotent.
We got that out of the way.
But it was so perfect because everybody canceled all our projects. And so then I told Joseph, let's go down to this little town in Mexico called San Miguel de Allende. There's an art school. How about if we go there and take some ceramics or some painting, or let's just like disconnect for a month and see what happens. You know, again, there's that month. I didn't think about that, Joseph. The same, giving yourself a month.
Well, what is it? 28 days to form a new habit.
Yeah.
Boom. Go ahead.
So we came here for a month. We took classes. You know, I was writing a screenplay and we were taking ceramics and all that. And we never left. We got 3 design jobs while we were here, and we ended up just all of a sudden our life unfolded. We went home, sold everything, got in the car with our dogs and whatever fit in the car, and we moved here. This was 11 years ago, and it was the best decision ever because this culture is different. The pace is different. We still worked a lot, and our interior design business still continued, but we were able to take siestas in the afternoons, and everything was like slower and no pressure. And so all of a sudden, that little raisin started getting plump like a juicy grape.
So Eli,
go ahead. Sorry.
You just mentioned it was the best decision ever. And I know that there was a best yes that you've also talked about throughout the years, of the best yes you've ever said. Do you want to speak to that?
Yes. Do you want me to talk about that, Meredith, or did you have a question?
Well, I just wanted to clarify for our listeners that you were living in San Diego prior to Mexico. So that's where your interior design business was. And then you moved to Mexico, and that's when the grape got plump. The raisin turned into a plump grape.
Okay. Exactly.
That's what I was...
So we're a bunch of plump grapes walking around.
Yeah, taking siestas. Now, don't tell anyone where you live again, because then you're just going to get another influx of expats, okay? All right, here we go.
This has been the best decision in the world. And let me just say, was it easy? Not always. Was it scary? Yes. It was like a huge leap of faith. Just taking this huge adventure. We actually said, should we just wait until we retire and then move here later? And we thought, why waste all those years? If it feels good now, and we didn't know our business was going to be successful here, but we thought, you know what? There's a bunch of artists here, and there's a lot of writers and actors and directors. And both of us got back into our theater, into the theater scene, which we had kind of forgotten about for a while. And so it just, you know, when you take a huge leap like that, you need to have absolute faith and trust with a capital T that somehow you won't like splat at the bottom, you know. Somehow you'll figure out how to land nicely or fly or whatever. And I just wanted to say that sometimes it takes taking that jump.
Yeah.
And regarding the best yes I ever said, which was another big permission, it was 20 some years ago. I was a single gay man for about 5 years. And there was a mass commitment ceremony happening at Gay Pride in San Diego. And I had heard about it. And I thought, oh, that would be so neat to see, you know, gay people committing to each other. Still, gay marriage wasn't legal yet. And so I went. And when I got there, there was some guy that was just standing there next to me. And when the minister said to them, please face each other and repeat these vows, this complete stranger that was standing next to me tapped me on the shoulder
and said, hey, do you want to do this?
And I said, yes, which was completely unlike me because in those days I did nothing without reading Consumer Reports and hiring private investigators and stuff. So yeah, I said yes, and we got married right on the spot. And at the end, I told the stranger, hey, this was great. Thanks for marrying me. And what's your name? And he said,
my name is Joseph.
I love that story.
And that's how we met and instantly got married. And it's almost 21 years that we've been
together. Oh, my God. It's such a beautiful story. I'm getting tear ducts. Like, I can feel them releasing right now. Is that how that happens? I don't know. Oh, man. Yeah. It's such a beautiful story.
Yeah, and that was also about permission, you know, giving myself permission to say, to follow that impulse to say yes. I normally would have said, yeah, right, or whatever. But the moment just felt so right, and I just said yes, and there, here we are. We exchanged rings like a week later, and then like 6 or 7 years ago when it became legal in California, we got married again legally, and we've been doing our lives together ever since.
Thank you. So backing up a little bit, Eli, thanks for sharing that story.
Thank you.
You mentioned something that's so important to our creative process, and I think it trips up a lot of our listeners, and that is the idea and the reality of the messy middle. So I think what happens is we believe that when we're following our joy, when we're following our bliss, that it's supposed to be easy. And then when it gets messy, we quit, right? So we approach life with a lot of yes, but, you know, when we have those moments of really being quiet and getting in touch with what brings us joy, I think a lot of us say, yes, but. Oh, I should take a singing class. Yes, but, you know. And then when it gets hard, we just quit. And we go back to that rat race.
Who can relate to that? Just about everyone, right? Oh, my God. So many. I mean, I know that everyone's heard stories about, you know, famous people who didn't quit after like 300 or 500 tries.
500 auditions was the one I read, yeah.
Yeah, or like Edison and Kentucky Fried Chicken guy, you know, all those guys. Yeah, you know, yes, the messy middle, and I'm right in the messy middle of Out of the Blue right now. It's really painful. I want to quit so many times. You know, the voices in our heads, oh, that's, who's going to want to see that? Or, oh, that's not good enough. Or you're not good enough. You know, all of those, all of us have those voices, right? Can everyone relate to this? I mean, we all have some version of that. And sometimes in the messy middle, those voices are screaming in your face. And you're just like hanging on by a thread. And there have been times that I've quit in the past with different projects. You know, but I really feel that when something is a calling, quitting is not an option.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to show up to confront those voices. And you got to have that same leap of faith, trust that there is something here. And eventually it will land. So, yeah, the messy middle is part of the process. And I think if we expect it, then it won't come as such a big surprise.
Yeah, I'm wondering, are there a few, help the listener who might not be so familiar with that messy middle, because maybe they've quit when they got there and they didn't quite know that that's where they were at. Like, what are some clues that you're in the messy middle?
Well, huge amount of procrastination.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, a lot of voices saying, oh, that's stupid. Oh, that's not, who's going to want that? Oh, nobody cares. Well, you know, a lot of that going on.
Mm-hmm.
Insomnia.
You know, yeah. Anxiousness, you know, feeling like, oh, you know, I can't sleep. This, you know, all, everything. It's just dreadful.
All the shit show.
All the shit.
Exactly. It's freaking, it's the dreadful, the most dreadful feeling in the world. But then through that, all of a sudden, there's a crack and all of a sudden there's light. And then you just follow that. And then hopefully it'll lead you to get inspired again and to find the joy. You know, here's something really, really important that I'm realizing right now is that when the joy begins to disappear, right, because there's, it's overshadowed by all this doubt and stuff, the way to get back on track is to follow that joy again.
Mm.
So that, for me, has to be what leads the way for this project specifically, because the outcome specifically is I want the audience to feel inspired and joyful in the end. So it has to be led by that.
Right. And so that joy piece of it too, you just said, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm going to reflect this back, which is that by going back and tapping into the joy, it also realigns the reason why you're doing it, which is to serve the community by telling your story.
Yes.
In the best way possible. So it's in relationship to service.
Yes. Very much. Very, very much. I mean, a piece of this nature is not something to be performed in a void. It's supposed mm-hmm. to be shared with an audience, you know? So how can I honor the audience in the best possible way, even though there will be some difficult moments in the show because, mm-hmm. you know, it's about my healing process and how I've dealt with some shit that's happened in my life and all that. So hopefully the message in the end is inspiration. You know, it's like we all have the power to heal our life. As shitty as some of it has been, we deserve to have a good life, and it is possible to heal that. So hopefully that will be the outcome.
Beautiful. Thank you, Eli.
Mm-hmm.
So Eli, in witnessing your creative process and in Meredith's creative process and in my own, I know that for some of our listeners, they may believe that this is something that's done alone. And I wonder if you can speak, Eli, to the importance of having a team of people and having a support system for your process. And
yes.
What that might look like and how important is that for our listener or not?
Well, I really believe that every dream, the dream is ours individually, but for every dream or any dream to come into fruition, a team, a support team is very necessary to be able to bring that into fruition, you know? And the thing is, we need to enroll other people in our dream through our enthusiasm about it, you know? So there's a level of trust that hopefully all the right people will show up and will be attracted to this particular project, whatever it is we're trying to birth into the world. And I think it's so important to have people that get it, that get what the project is or what the dream is, that support you, that you feel safe in the process. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, both of you, Meredith and Joseph, have been integral parts of this process for me. And there will be a lot of other people in this team that will help to birth this. And it's beautiful. It's so beautiful when other people get enrolled in it and go, I get it. I get what this is. And I want to be part of this, you know. Mm. And, oh, my God. There's nothing more amazing.
So can you speak to those listeners who are believing that nobody cares? Nobody in their life cares about their dream. What can you share with them?
Well, I would say that that's just one of those voices, the nasty voices that we need to learn to listen to and realize why that voice is there and then be able to put it in its place and quiet it down. Because that is a lie. That message is a lie. Because if that dream weren't necessary, it wouldn't have come to you. You know, the universe puts dreams in us because we're the ones that can bring them into fruition. Only you can bring that dream into fruition.
Okay, but what if somebody is thinking, everybody in my life, my family, my friends, my dog sitter, everybody, they don't care. Like, what if they really do feel alone and abandoned? Sorry to be dramatic, but what if that's true for people?
Well, I would say then you've got the wrong people around you. Because you've got to have people that love you, that support you, that encourage you, that light you up in your life. You know, that's what this is about. And so maybe it's a chance for you to rise above and, you know, start attracting people of a higher frequency or something, of people who can support and love what you do by maybe joining support groups or joining other groups with people who are also creating something similar, you know, so that you can have allies. You know, in Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, the hero never gets through it on his own or her own. You know, we need allies. That, you know, the ally is, you know, the little Yoda in the Star Wars character, you know, that helps Luke Skywalker make some decisions, you know, to beat the villain. We all have villains in our lives and we all have challenges and we can't really do it alone. We need allies that can support our process.
Beautiful. I'm going to throw something out there, which is if there is a listener that is feeling completely stuck and they feel like they don't have anyone to turn to that is in their immediate life right now, you can contact me. You can contact me and I will find someone, a mentor for you.
Yes.
I promise. Okay. So I'm throwing that out there to our listeners.
Yes. Well, you know, all three of us are coaches and we know how powerful the coaching process is. And each of us has a different specialty or a different niche that we focus on. But that's what a coach does. That is, a coach is a cheerleader and it's a guide and it's an ally that supports your dream and supports your process. And this isn't in any way some kind of a sales pitch, but that is truly the beauty of what coaching is. I think a lot of people don't know what it is. They just think, oh, everybody's doing coach or everybody thinks they're a coach. But the truth is that when you land with a correct coach for you, it's like having such a tremendous, loving support system to help you get clarity about what it is that you're trying to create in your life and then create a system or steps that you can take to be able to achieve that. And that's a very unique relationship in the world.
It is. And I will say I was always resistant to it because I was that I always had that feeling. I was hard on myself. I was like, if I don't know the answer, it's because I haven't done enough work to find it.
Yeah.
Right?
That sounds exhausting.
It is exhausting and it's lonely. And then when I didn't achieve certain goals that I had set for myself, I thought of myself as a failure, which is not at all the case. Right? Mm-hmm. It's that I just needed a mentor. I needed guidance. I needed somebody else that I could lean on that wasn't just, you know, my mom or my dad who didn't necessarily understand my path. So
yeah.
I think that it's super, super important to not only have that mentor, but to be okay with asking for help.
That is huge. That is huge at every level.
Yeah.
And you know something? What immediately triggered for me is when I had cancer, you know, 7 years ago, I didn't want to tell anybody at first. You know, I kind of saw it like a personal failure of mine at some level. And I was afraid that, like, if my clients found out, they wouldn't hire me to do interior design for them. So a huge aspect of my healing, truly, of my healing process was to realize that I needed help and that I needed to ask for help. Yeah. And it didn't feel right at the beginning, but when I, you know, kind of came out of the closet with my cancer journey and people said, "What can I do to help you?" And I told them, "Oh my God, it's an act of self-love to ask for help."
Yeah.
And that was so healing. And that was one of the pillars that helped me overcome the pretty dire diagnosis that I had.
Beautiful. Thank you, Eli.
Yes.
It makes me think of the phrase that's so common. It was more common a few years ago, and that is, it takes a village, and that typically is in reference to, it takes a village to raise a child. But I know and believe and trust that it also takes a village to raise us.
Mm-hmm.
Even as adults, we need a village. We need a community. We need that support system. So as Eli was saying, if you don't have that in your life, go create it. If the people in your life are not supportive and loving and nurturing, there are 8 billion people in the world. I bet you can find somebody who says, "I believe in you."
Yes.
Yeah. That's so important. And I think that that's one of the things that this podcast is doing and will continue to do, you know, because we need to connect to some sort of a community that's supportive, that understands, you know, as creative types or anybody who's trying to birth anything new needs that. So thank you both for creating this space where people can come and hopefully get some inspiration and that extra little nudge about, you can do this, you can do this. Whatever it is, you got this. It's huge. And whoever's out there, I don't know what your dream is or what it is you've been trying to birth that you've told yourself no. You don't need to wait till you're a certain age to do it. It's like, if it's in your heart to do it, this is the time. You know, the world needs healing, in case we haven't been paying attention. The whole world needs healing. And I believe truly the only way that we can heal the world is by first healing ourselves and then help to guide other people to heal their own lives. And I believe that's how we can make an impact in the world.
Well said.
Thank you, Eli. Where can people find you, Eli?
People can find me. Well, if you want to know about Out of the Blue, which would be great because, you know, we're trying to get some buzz around it and you can stay informed when the big world premiere happens. I don't know when that's going to happen. Well, hopefully this coming fall. OutoftheBlueShow.com. Yes. And all the information is there. There's a contact information there too.
Amazing. Thank you, Eli.
Thank you both. This was wonderful. Thank you for what you're doing to help the world.
All right.
Meredith, one word to describe your experience over the last few minutes?
Humbled.
Eli?
Expansive.
Inspiring. So, listener, please feel free to give yourself permission to give yourself quiet and space to really connect with what it is that sets your hearts on fire, set your heart on fire. And feel free to share this episode with your friends and family.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Ciao.
Ciao. We want to give a special shout out to Amy Shelley and Gary Grundy of High Fiction for letting us use their music in this podcast. Please tune in next week when we have a fantastic conversation with musical theater artist and performer Sarah Ellis. See you next time.